die. Oh, not me. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guts. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free, and I damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. The time has come, gonna take a stand. Spread these words all across the land, from sea to sea. Don't tread on me. Tell your neighbors, tell all your friends, gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible, don't tread on my guns. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only son. Don't tread on me, don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free, and I'll damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Hey, everybody, welcome back into the show. A second hour of today, this absolutely terrific Thursday, May 8th, 2025 edition, Your Defending Fathers with Chuck and Randy Bishop here on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. One of the things that is going on in Lansing, and I think that the goal is to try to get the budget passed before summer break. I don't think it's going to happen. I think the House is going to hold up a lot of the spending that Governor Gretchen Whitmer and the Democrats in the state Senate want to pass in the next upcoming budget. Fiscal year 2026, folks, starts at midnight on September 30th. Well, in the news source, top of the hour report earlier this morning, $35 million for a teenager mental health clinic in Traverse City. A quote was made on the news that John Roth, the state representative, is hoping that it gets funded in this upcoming budget, expected to be done in June. Well, that's next month. And based on certain committee budgets, various departments, agencies within the state government, I don't think that they're going to be able to accomplish this. Now, the House has already passed a continuing resolution budget of $20 billion. Roughly 25% of what the governor is asking for. Why would they do that? Because it would be enough money to keep the state government open while they continue negotiating for the final budget plan. $20 billion basically to keep the schools, the prisons, and the road repairs on track while they negotiate heading into the fall session. When they get back from their summer break, it'll be their number one priority. Governor Gretchen Whitmer does not want the state government shut down at the stroke of midnight on September 30th. She will do whatever she has to do to make sure that doesn't occur. But if it does occur, of course, her and the Senate Democrats are going to blame it on the House Republicans. Well, that's all fine and good, Governor. You can blame whoever you want to blame, but we have got to reduce the spending in Lansing. 5% minimum should be on the chopping block, but this governor isn't heading in that direction. Senate Democrats have their pork barrel projects. Well, when you add them all up, you know what the number is? $4 billion is what has been submitted and talked about, publicly displayed via the new rules under the House Appropriations Committee. The deadline last Friday, $4 billion in pork barrel spending going into district requests. Well, if you eliminate those, there's your 5% cut. We'll see where it goes. Family court, friend of the court, and custody. We're going to talk with Jonathan Deke about it in the next segment. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ian Murphy from the Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord. Join me every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with Trucker Randy for an update on all things happening at the Iron Pig. We're open 7 days a week and serving breakfast Saturdays and Sundays. You can order online anytime for takeout, curbside, and delivery at ironpigsmoke.com. And be sure to keep up with our legal battle against the health department by subscribing to our podcast at fuelcasttv.com.
Life is a wonderful journey, from fresh beginnings and future adventures to all the best life has to offer. Along this incredible journey, you want to safeguard what's most important to you. Hi, I'm Tristan Cole, your local Farm Bureau insurance agent, and I'm always nearby to help protect you and your loved ones along the way. Let's talk about your journey and protecting what matters most. Call me at 231-533-6489 or visit me online at TristanCole.com. We're Farm Bureau Insurance, Michigan's insurance company.
LegendarySystems.net now offers affordable remote tech support for your computer, the same service that large companies have been using for years. To discuss your needs and pricing, call us at 231-818-8349. Don't take your computer in for repairs. Let us do it remotely. Again, call us today at 231-818-8349.
At Royal Tire in Petoskey, we know that you've got things to do and places to go. And you need safe and reliable tires that will get you there and back every time. Tires like the Michelin Defender LTX or the Michelin Cross Climate 2. We believe in these tires so much, we put them on our own vehicles. So stop by Royal Tire today and let our tire experts find the right Michelin tire to keep you and your family safe. When you think tires, think Royal Tire in Petoskey.
If you're nearing 65, you're probably being bombarded by insurance companies by mail and phone, trying to sell you this product or that. Laura Bogdan has personally looked after the needs of seniors, taking the time to explain how Medicare works and other benefits you may not even be aware of. Laura is ready to help you today.
I'm Laura Bogdan. Call me today, 231-264-6890, 231-264-6890.
Folks out there that own firearms are looking to buy a new or used gun or fix up that old piece at a good price, there's Curtis Gunsmithing. Not too far off the beaten path at 9996 Picker Lake Road in Petoskey, Mr. Tom Curtis is an AGI-certified gunsmith and firearm connoisseur. Don't send your gun out or travel far away for your specialized gun work. You have a friend in your own backyard. Call Curtis Gunsmithing today, 231-347-3487.
Everybody, welcome back into the show. Second segment of hour number two today. Joining us on the line right now is Jonathan Deke, representing the Institute for Family Justice. Good morning, Jonathan.
Hey, good morning, Randy.
Hey, I had you on the show last week. We talked about your institute and the information that you have been forced to basically self-teach yourself over the years dealing with friend of the court and custody battles and things like that in order to see your children. I got a couple of people who had texted me the information to be sent to them, and I had asked the folder to be created in my phone. It came up with family, and that's what I was basically sending the information out to people. Any response so far from our audience? Anybody reach out to you yet to ask for your advice on these issues?
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't received any calls on that from the show yet.
Okay, very good. We gave out the phone number 231-330-6825. That is the correct number, correct?
Yeah, that's my cell phone.
Okay, very good. And the website is i4fj.com, Institute for Family Justice. I did get a couple other responses that people said that, yes, they've been dealing with these issues for a long time. Not going to mention any names, but basically this gentleman had to fight for custody, actually to fight custody, and won in court. What is your perspective on that process? If a father wants to get custody of a son, daughter, or whatever, it's a pretty difficult process, and the court system doesn't seem set up to really be in favor of fathers and custody and dealing with these issues. Has that been your experience? Do you kind of agree with that statement?
Yeah, the statistics show that that's clearly the case, and that most children are denied equal access to both their mother and father. And men predominantly are the ones that end up becoming, at best, a weekend warrior in their children's life.
Now, is there any actual studies or statistics that you can find that would, you know, validate that? Because this was pretty much unscientific, but three out of the four text messages I got were all guys complaining that it's a rigged system against them, and they always favor the mother.
Yeah, I can get you statistics. I have some statistics I can pull up right now, not those exact ones, but I can show you the statistics of the children, what happens to the children when they don't have equal access to their mother or father.
Now, that would be good, because one of the things that we talk about all the time, and, you know, this is a very, very delicate situation. It's painful. You know, people brought to tears sometimes in just talking to me about it over the years. Always calling me after the show asking for advice. Who should they contact? Is there a way they can get around friend of the court, which is usually done, Jonathan, if I'm correct? This is a process that's always done through the county level. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, definitely done through the county level. And the friend of the court is the child support administration arm of the circuit court. And you don't actually have to use the friend of the court. That's totally optional. Unless you're poor. If you are poor and you're on any kind of government assistance, the federal government forces the friend of the court on you and forces them to enforce child support.
Okay, and that's because of you being on some type of assistance automatically triggers that activity that you're forced into that situation. Is that correct?
That's correct. And, you know, 99% of the time, it's the mother that goes and gets the services. She'll get the Medicaid and the WIC or the food stamps. And as soon as she goes and gets those services, then in order for her to receive those, she has to go after the father for child support. And so instead of, like, parents being able to work out an agreement and parenting time and, like, the support on their own, it forces the government's involvement.
Now, one of the things that I found to be interesting, gentleman called me on my cell phone, and we were on the phone probably about 15, 20 minutes, and he said that they had him and his ex-wife. Very cordial divorce. It wasn't adversarial in any way, shape, or form. But like you said, she did sign up, I believe he said, for food stamps or food assistance. And because of that, the friend of court got involved and they set up a mediation hearing or whatever, the very first meeting. Well, the parents walked in, Jonathan, and they both had a written agreement between themselves that this was the holiday schedule, this was the weekend schedule, this would be the times for, you know, hooking up to give custody over to the other parent on a certain Friday night, 5 o'clock kind of thing, and that parent would have the children until 5 o'clock Sunday night. They would meet back at the same location, you know, to give the custody back to the other parent. And the friend of the court denied it. They didn't allow them to set up that schedule. They didn't allow them to set up holidays, and actually wanted to renegotiate the whole thing right there in the front of the court. And both the man and the woman looked at each other and going, wait a minute. There are children. This is our divorce. This is the way we want to do it. And they actually had to make some changes based on this person at the front of the court. Who are these people at the front of the court? When you go in there in that kind of setting, who are these people? Are they part of the actual court system, or are they just counselors, or who are these people?
Yeah, they are part of the court system. They work directly for the circuit court, and they are there to administer and enforce child support. And they are created by the Title IV-D Act, so of the Social Security Act, Title IV-D, where it reimburses these state agencies $2 for every $3 spent. So in order for them to maintain their budget and their funding, they have to do things to enforce child support. Otherwise, they lose two-thirds of their budget. And so they're absolutely a part of the court. And the fact that they wouldn't accept a parent's agreed-upon order goes to show that they have interests that aren't for the family. That's why Carol Rhodes wrote the book, Friend of the Court, Enemy of the Family, right? This agency specifically separates families, not all of them, but unfortunately some of them, because, you know, some people are corrupt, some people see opportunity to make money, and when they see that opportunity, they let go of their moral ethical code. And unfortunately, in Michigan, we have a whole lot of that. I just read a report that Michigan ranks 43rd, you know, in the top 50 worst states, which puts us in the top 10, right? You know, the 50th worst state, and we're like the 43rd, so it's pretty difficult to be here right now. And that just goes to show that, you know, the government in Michigan right now lost sight of its duty to serve and protect the people, and now it looks at the people as just like something that's like a commodity to be made money off of. And so we really have to look at what we can do to restore the Constitution to the state of Michigan, and that starts with society's greatest asset, with our children. Because if we don't defend our children, right, from this issue, then we don't have a society to speak of. And so we really need to look at what we can do to change the way the front of the court operates in the state of Michigan so that we can protect our greatest asset in our future.
Well, one of the things that is very disturbing when you and I were discussing this and you were explaining to me the financial justification, the financial reasons why the front of the court operates the way they do. And like you say, basically, this is done as a way for them to generate revenue to the court system and justify basically all their salaries and budget, overall budget, and basically is a revenue generator for the state.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. Emmett County, they used to brag on their website about how great their collections were, you know, and how much money they were bringing in, right? And so part of the caveats with Title IV-D, it's a percentage-based deal. So if they're ordered to collect $100,000 in child support a year and they only collect $30,000, they don't get the full reimbursement of the $2 on the $3 they spend. They only get a percentage of it. They have to collect at least 80% of all child support owed in the county in order to get 100% of the reimbursement. So they are incentivized to viciously collect and enforce child support orders despite any type of potential hardship that a parent may be going through. I know people specifically, I was sitting in court in Emmett County when Scott Beatty was still on the bench, right? And mm-hmm. Scott Beatty said there, let me give you some background. The mother and father had been working out their custody situation. The father, in this case, actually had primary custody. The mother had been getting her life together, was spending more time with their daughter, and wasn't working as much. And the father said such that, you know, she hasn't been working as much, but she's been spending a lot more time with her daughter. So, you know, I'm not really worried about the child support she hasn't paid. And the mother said, you know, yeah, I haven't been able to work as much. You know, I've been spending more time with my daughter, so I've had higher expenses, so I can't afford to pay this. And I have the recording. I recorded this. Scott Beatty says, well, I understand what you're saying here, but the real issue is that we have a court order that's not being followed, and you have to follow the court order. So if you don't come up with a certain amount of money within 30 days, you're going to have to spend 30 days in jail. And so that poor little girl, whose parents were working this out, was spending more time with mommy, now is risking her mom going to jail because her mommy's not following a court order when the government decided to decide what's best for the family. The government should not be deciding what's best for our family.
Now, on that point, who is the entity that issued the court order? Was that during the divorce process, or was that done by the friend of a court order after the divorce, and then they were put in place with the friend of the court? Who actually enters those court orders that they were supposedly violating?
So the friend of the court doesn't actually create or doesn't actually sign the order. The friend of the court listens to what the parties say and then makes a recommendation. And that recommendation goes to the circuit court judge. At that time, it would have been Johnson. Now it's Deegan. And that one, the Deegan will see the court order and they just robo-sign it. They just stamp off it and sign whatever.
So whatever the recommendation is from the friend of the court, that's what they turn into a court order. Now, aren't those judges elected?
Well, they say that they're elected in Michigan, but if you've noticed, if you follow our judges in Emmett County and most in Michigan, all the judges run unopposed. And then when it's time for a new judge, a judge will get elected unopposed, retire, and then the governor gets to just pick the new judge that will then run unopposed. Just very much like what happened with Jennifer Deegan when Charles Johnson retired, right? He retired after he won the election, and then Gretchen Whitmer appointed Jennifer Deegan.
Ah, gotcha. So it's kind of like the good old boy club of as to whoever the governor is at the time.
Yeah, the governor gets to pick the judge when a judge retires. Absolutely.
Got it. Got a text message in. What word should I use, Randy, for the auto response on your phone? We're going to go with family. I put out something else previously, but let's go with family. If you like this information, you would like to be able to reach Jonathan or go to his website, FJ, Institute for Family Justice.com is the website. Or you guys know people that may need advice and guidance from Jonathan and his institute. Again, just text me the word family. Use the word family, and I'll send you the screenshot of his information. His mobile phone number is the best to call, and as well as look at the website. So anytime you hear of anybody having these kind of issues, like you say, Jonathan, basically mom and dad have something worked out, but they go and are forced to go to these hearings with friend of the court and possibly them wanting to change everything. And then even the judge saying, well, I'm sorry, but the court order says you have to do this. And if you don't, you're going to spend time in jail, even though the parents are working everything out.
Right. And that just shows the kind of travesty happening here in Emmett County, because actually there was options for that family. That father could have purged the mother's child support debt, but he didn't know the law. Neither of them had an attorney. Scott Beatty is an attorney. He knew the law, and he had a duty to say, okay, well, we can go ahead and just purge this. But he violated his oath of office to serve the people by withholding information so that they can enforce child support orders so they can maintain his salary.
Absolutely. Understand totally. Great information. I got a couple of text messages already. Jonathan, we appreciate your insight, and we'll be in touch. We'll talk to you soon.
Later. Thank you.
On the hour.
This is Michigan News Source, brought to you by Enbridge, delivering safe, reliable energy to fuel your future.